The Behind the Buy podcast features audio stories told by members of the federal acquisition workforce who have successfully executed best practice IT contracting strategies from the TechFAR and Digital Services Playbook to help their agency meet its mission.
Hi everyone, I'm Ann Rung, the Administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, and today for the administration's Behind the Buy audio series, we're going to hear from a White House contracting officer who will discuss how to make procurement simple and intuitive. Tracy Walker is a contracting officer for the Executive Office of the President and serves as a founding member of the United States Digital Services Procurement Team. Through USDS, Tracy drives strategies and implementation approaches for digital services and agile procurement for agencies such as the Forest Service, Small Business Administration, and the Department of Veterans Affairs. Thanks, Tracy, for joining us today for Behind the Buy. So, Tracy, how long have you served in the federal government?
So I've been in the federal government for 15 years now.
And what did you do before you got into the federal government?
I was a college student. Oh. So this was my first job right out of college.
Did you join as a contracting officer?
I did. I had no idea what a contracting officer was when I got the job, but I was quickly trained up and figured it out pretty quickly. So.
And tell me what you love most about being a contracting officer.
I love the challenge of figuring out problems and solutions and then seeing those kind of manifest themselves in acquisitions that result in the like awesomeness of the government and what it can do for its people and as well as, you know, for the government internally too.
And it's so important for the mission delivery of the agencies. So
absolutely.
I applaud you for your work. So using a government service shouldn't be stressful, confusing, or daunting, and it's our job to build services that are very simple and intuitive, so that users can succeed the first time unaided. So tell us a little bit about a procurement that you improved by making it simple and intuitive.
So at the Executive Office of the President, we purchased a specific technology platform to help meet the needs of the end users. And in order to facilitate the development of the applications for the various EOP components, we needed to put in place a simple, quick, and flexible method of procuring system integration support services on a regular basis. So we created a multiple award blanket purchase agreement using GSA Schedule 70, and that required the system integrators to propose an agile software development method, which we could then use on all of the task orders that were being placed under that blank purchase agreement.
So what was your customer trying to accomplish?
So we had several key strategies that we figured out through market research. We wanted to make sure that we didn't get stuck into a proprietary solution or contract, so that if the service provider of the technology platform wasn't performing, we could get we could have a way to get out of that easy. Mm-hmm. We also wanted to deploy requirements for all software development on an agile basis. We knew that the kind of old traditional waterfall methods weren't really working out for us anymore, mm-hmm. and so we wanted to adopt this agile process and find a way to do it in a contract. We also wanted to use modular contracting methods. We wanted to be able to keep our costs and our risks low, and we also wanted to have frequent competitions with vendors that we already had pre-screened as a way to get to them quickly and not have to go through a lot of acquisition cycles when we knew that we needed new work done. And we also wanted to find the service providers who were the subject matter experts in the platform technology we chose. We were very specific about the fact that we wanted to find specialists who knew the technology and who knew how to do it on an agile software basis, deployments, and that way we were trying to guarantee our success.
So that sounds like it makes a lot of sense. So one of the things I hear from industry and government a lot is the key, as you know, the key to a successful acquisition is really communication. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's something that was really integral to this effort. So how did you ensure that communication was really simple and clear for every step of this procurement, for everyone involved?
So we definitely started with an integrated project team. We brought everybody to the table at the very beginning. And
does that happen often?
I don't think it does.
Yeah.
I've been working with this Chief Information Officers group and really embedded myself in with them in the sense that it was like, okay, now we're doing a new procurement. How do we kind of figure this out? Mm-hmm. And we went through several iterations where we talked through different approaches and came together on the one that we used ultimately as a team. And that involved management and legal and budget and everybody all the way down the line to, you know, the end users who would be the ultimate customer. customers of the products that were being delivered.
And it's, I mean, I asked you the question whether that happens a lot, because I think it's really important to have that integrated team from beginning to end. And you do often hear that people feel like the ball gets passed, you know, from one person to another, and that team isn't working together from beginning to end. But it sounds like the strategy you deployed here was that team staying together throughout.
And originally we had looked at the strategy of doing one task order, one contract for an integration of the service that we needed along with the integrator and let the integrators provide the solution. Yeah. But what we found out is that we really needed to buy and figure out the platform itself, mm-hmm. and then figure out who was really successful in implementing that platform, yeah. versus trying to take and hope that we were going to get a complete solution, yeah. from one company. We decided to kind of take that into our own hands and look at it from that point of view. So it was a little bit of a flip, but it worked, mm-hmm. out very, very well. So,
and with many of these acquisitions, you know, you're going to have a lot of stakeholders. So, mm-hmm. for this, how did you tailor your language for each group of stakeholders?
So for the customer, we were definitely introducing some new ideas and some new concepts, especially with the idea of Agile. And also the technology that we chose was not something that had been implemented within the EOP.
Did you find that you had explained to your customers what Agile means?
Yes, absolutely. And
were they nervous or skeptical?
We had already kind of had success with Agile implementations already. So we were able to point and say, hey, this is how we were able to do this quickly. And if you need something changed, you can get it within a month versus having to wait for 6 months or, mm-hmm. something. And so we had already some success. And so using that definitely helped. And I worked on that contract as well, and that was definitely my training ground, mm-hmm. so to speak, in learning how to do this, and we're applying the same principles. But the communication definitely was helpful. We also encouraged training and brought training in for the customers, mm-hmm. in order to teach them how to create user stories and also understand the Agile process and get a little bit more comfortable with that and the terms that are used, because there's several new terminologies, mm-hmm. and processes that we just don't use on the regular day-to-day basis.
That's a great point.
We also talked about how easy it was going to be to purchase through this vehicle, mm-hmm. once we got it established and put together, because we really focused on the idea that simple statements of objectives were all that were going to be needed in order to do a task order underneath this. Mm-hmm. We'd already built in the way that the companies would be proposing their Agile methodology. It was part of the establishment of the BPA. And once we got the task orders, then it just really became around what do they need for a system? Mm-hmm. What was the applications that they need? Or do they need a range of applications? And how do we convey that into a task order? And that was very simple. And so they've really appreciated that.
And that's, I mean, as a customer, that's what you're really looking for, right? Besides, mm-hmm. the performance piece of it, you want to make sure it's really easy to use.
Yes, absolutely. The supporting offices, we brought in the legal team and had them as part of the team from the beginning. And so, mm-hmm. any of the questions or concerns that they had, this is some non-precedented work that we've been doing in terms of contracting. And so there wasn't the ability for them to really reference things that have already been done or case law or anything.
Yeah.
And so we had to make them feel very comfortable about what we were doing. And because they got to learn the process through the acquisition with us and understanding the needs, we were able to then turn it around very quickly in terms of legal reviews and getting the sufficiency enough for them to be able to stand behind it in the event that we did potentially get a protest, which, you know, we didn't, but at the same time, they were prepared to be able to defend it if we did.
It's important that the lawyers be part of the process from beginning,
yes.
to end, so that was a smart move. And who else? Did you bring in the CFO community?
We brought in the CFO community as well. In our organization, we are actually part of the CFO. And so we also had the budget people from the customers and the chief information officer budget person there as well to talk through how we could scope this out. We really didn't have independent government cost estimates at the time, because we hadn't ever done this kind of, you know, Agile process. So we really tried to figure it out and work through it together and to make sure that we had the concept of what was going to be spent and how much we could get for how much we had to spend.
So for the CFO team, this was something somewhat new or different?
Mm-hmm. Them as well, but yeah. we kind of walked everybody through it together.
And they could see the benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And what about industry, which is such another important part of this process?
So we had an industry day with the prospective companies that we were looking to bring in, to gauge their reaction to the plan. We just had a very informal roundtable discussion as opposed to a formal industry day presentation type of thing. This was very early in the process to be like, hey, we're thinking of this. What do you think about that? And they were all very excited about the idea. They were interested and wanted to participate. And nobody really threw up any big red flags that said, this can't be done. We don't want to do this. We don't want to participate.
What did they like best?
They really liked the flexibilities that we were building into the blanket purchase agreement and to the subsequent task orders with the idea that they could come to the table with their own agile process. We didn't set and say, you must follow Scrum, you must follow Kanban. We said, propose one and tell us how it's going to work, and then we'll evaluate it based on that.
So they like that you weren't being overly prescriptive, too government specific. You're just, this is the outcome I need. You tell me what the best way to achieve that is.
We know there's many ways to do this. You are the ones that are in the industry. Tell us how you want it done. And they also like the fact that it was a multiple award BPA. And some, we kind of were worried about the fact that somebody might think that there was this was going to be too administratively complex to have several companies all working in the same environment, multiple development teams. How do you, you know, control code? How do you control all of this? Since we've put this into play, we have basically the managing office controls all of that for the government piece, and that is what they definitely manage. But we have working teams together, and they bring up the problems, and we work through it as a team. So it is definitely not a lot of finger pointing that has been out there so far.
Were the winning proposers a combination of small, medium, large size businesses?
The ones that we have were large businesses, but we did include small businesses in the competition. Unfortunately, we are on a very fast timeline in order to get this put in place because we had to we had an option ending, and we had to, had to do a make sure that we had something in place for the beginning of that. However, you know, we definitely included small business at the table and made sure that they were very well informed about what was going on.
And then, are there other procurements that you're working on where you've found success using similar strategies?
Definitely. As I mentioned before, we had already put in place an Agile contract at the White House, and that was working very well. That was the basis for the whitehouse.gov website team. And now I'm working with GSA right now to actually take this concept of the multiple award BPA for the specific technology platform and doing this on a government-wide type of thing. So we're looking at to say we want a specialized group of companies to come in who have the knowledge of a product, and then we want you to do it on an agile basis. And we want to be able to quickly turn these task orders around and make it very easy to just start with a statement of objective and let industry tell us how they're going to do it and come back with a repeatable process to deliver functioning working code for our agencies.
I'd be really anxious to see the results of that. So how do you convince other agencies to adopt these strategies? Or maybe it's not a matter of convincing, because I think it makes so much sense. So how do we get the word out? How do we get other agencies adopting these strategies?
I think that definitely talking about the successes, also talking about the challenges and saying, we know that this is going to be challenging. My biggest recommendation is going to be to start small. Pick smaller projects, smaller efforts, really look at scoping and say, like, if we could get something launched within 6 months or a year, what would it be and what would this look like? And try to start small. I definitely, you know, like the idea of using 8As or hub zones in terms of the set aside if you need a place to have kind of a safe environment to work with a company that does Agile before actually having a competition if you're not that familiar with it. And then also looking and talking to industry and figuring out how they do this. This is their process. They came and started Agile, and we're adopting a lot of the techniques and the practices that they have. And we really are trying to show, you know, that we are, I think, being innovative in the idea that we can get to product faster. And that I think that is going to be the biggest win for agencies to see, and that is within the first year of a contract, you can actually have something delivered and start working on it and then working on the enhancements without having to, think and conceive of what's going to happen 3 years down the line. You only have to worry about what's happening today and the needs of the end users today.
Right. And you want to know, how do you buy when you're mm-hmm. talking to industry? And we want to reflect those practices.
Exactly.
So requirements, which is such a key part of any acquisition, they can change, and sometimes you need an exit strategy. So how do you plan for an exit strategy with Agile acquisitions?
So there's several strategies that I use. One is using modular contracting methods in the sense that I don't do periods of performance over a year for any specific task order. And the reason is that as things are changing and become more flexible, or we need to be able to get out quick, I'm not locked into the perceived idea that I've got a base plus 4 years of an option, or that my acquisition strategy is based on the fact that I know I'm going to have to reevaluate within a year and see how performance is going. So not letting it go too far down the line, which is, admittedly a little bit more burdensome on the contracting side, but I'm finding that it's easier to be proactive in these situations mm-hmm. and really be with the teams mm-hmm. and finding out when things are going wrong, as opposed to waiting until hearing silence, and then the right. world explodes and there's major problems and there's no way to kind of figure out where yeah. the problem started and how to unravel it, and kind of walking away at that point.
Right.
The other thing is including continuity of operations and extension clauses, in case that we need to get out of a task order, but at the same time, we still need to compete for something new. Mm-hmm. Using those clauses gives a contracting officer the ability to say, okay, we need to get out of this. We're not gonna extend an option per se, mm-hmm. but we are gonna continue with services while we do a new competition. And then also keeping, especially with technology and either commercial off-the-shelf products or open source products, or even custom design things, is mm-hmm. that the government should be, in these situations, keeping the source code and the intellectual property in the hands of the government. We're asking people to come in and define and develop products and solutions for us. So mm-hmm. at the end of the day, they should be the government's, because we're paying money for those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so once we keep that in-house with us, then we can change the people who provide that in the case that the service provider is not mm-hmm. doing what we want. In the other side of that, there's definitely the idea that termination for convenience is not a negative thing. So let's say that we finish our task early mm-hmm. and we don't need to continue on anymore. Utilizing that as a tool, because that very much mirrors what industry does with agile acquisitions, is they can just pretty much walk away at the end of when a thing is done. Mm-hmm. But the way that we kind of look at contracts is we're kind of set.
Right.
So I would using those and saying like, hey, we got success, we got done early, mm-hmm. let's walk away, and going ahead and using those termination for convenience.
So you're trying to really kind of balance managing risk with driving performance at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
How did industry react to task orders being limited to 1 year? Was that something that they saw as a positive or something that concerned them?
One of the strategies that I did employ with that is to include award terms mm-hmm. and to also utilize the idea of logical follow-ons. In the sense that it's not a given that you're going to get an option. You have to either earn it, or the performance is going to be justified mm-hmm. under a logical follow-on, which is perfectly allowable underneath
right.
the FAR, because they're originally competed. In the sense that, yes, it's a tool that I can use as a contracting officer, and therefore, the companies knew they had the BPA, and they know that work is potentially going to continue to come underneath that BPA, but they also aren't just automatically given that. And so I think it kind of keeps them on their toes a little bit, and it keeps them thinking about how they're going to improve. And I can say with the experience where I use with the award term, and that is incentivizing excellent performance, not just the standard, yes, they met the acceptable quality levels, but actually really saying here is what excellent is and defining that. And we have received excellence mm-hmm. out of that company, and so thus far, I think, earned 3 of their 5 award terms at this point.
That's great.
And so I think with Agile especially, incentivizing the team that is on site is one of the most key things. And with an award term, you're incentivizing the team to work harder because they kind of control their own destiny at that point.
Right.
Whereas an award fee, that might go to the company and might not actually trickle down to the people who are trying to do that.
Yeah.
So with a term, they know they've got a job coming up at the end of that period of performance.
And there's incentive.
Exactly.
So I was surprised when you said you've been in the workforce 15 years. People can't see Tracy, but you do not look like you've been in the workforce for 15 years. But thinking back to that time, what do you think is the biggest challenge for someone new to the federal acquisition workforce?
I think that getting the authority to be innovative is very hard when starting out in acquisition. Acquisition workforce is kind of an apprentice master type of education process where you work together with your mentors and figure out how to get more and more responsibilities as that comes up. But what I have seen is that, starting out and getting involved from the technology side definitely helped my career. I've started in IT, even though I went to school as a history major. I had no IT background at all, and really started working with the Federal Technology Service at the time with General Service Administration. Mm-hmm. And so working IT contracts was the first thing that I did.
Yeah, you learned on the job.
Learned on the job, got put in and thrown into this world with terms that made no sense at all, and just kind of really jumped in. And so I think that is definitely what people should do when they first start out, is really jump in and figure out what sings to them and embrace that and really grab that and then become almost the subject matter expert for whatever that is. And then once that happens, you start becoming the go-to person.
Right.
And people are going to come and find you and say, how did you do that one piece? So that can really help somebody's career in kind of launching them up. And I think also doing the jobs that nobody wants to be done, becoming a closeout specialist, becoming somebody who really, advocates for small businesses, or going out and doing the market research to find companies that are self-marketing themselves and coming and saying, like, I need somebody who can do this solution. And then you've got, pull it out of your bag and you're like, I know somebody who can do this.
Right.
Kind of becoming indispensable that way.
And, the getting the authority piece, when you talked about that, it resonated with me. And I think that's somewhere where our office, the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, can help, because what we want to do is create what we're calling like safe space for contracting officers in every agency to be innovative, to know that they have the support of the agency leadership to take what's perceived to be risk, even though you might argue in the end Agile is lower risk than some of our traditional approaches. But I think that's good advice to kind of tackle all parts of the acquisition. Also, what really resonated with me is when you said that, you had to learn IT on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And for everyone listening, Tracy is starting a project to really train the acquisition workforce in digital IT acquisitions and give people that specialized training so they're not just sort of maybe floundering around the first few years without a lot of training. So I think that's incredibly important work. So how do you recommend that millennials counter some of these challenges?
I think, as I kind of mentioned, becoming a champion for something that you really, really enjoy, whether it's agile acquisition, maybe it's figuring out how to buy cloud technology. I'm specifically talking to, like the IT piece of it, but it could be for any thing in specific. Maybe you're in construction, you really want to figure out how to buy, architectural services. So really becoming that person that works with industry, learns from industry, embeds himself, figures out how to do these solutions, and then brings that back to the office and actually talks about it and geeks out about it a little bit. In IT, definitely we're working with all of the geeks, but I consider myself an acquisition geek when I'm surrounded with all of them. And definitely
wear that title with honor.
Absolutely.
I'm proud of that title.
And so, spending time on forums talking about acquisition and figuring out how.
Talking to your peers.
Exactly. How do I challenge this and not saying there is one way to do this and there is not one interpretation, which is one of the, I think, most amazing things about being a contracting officer, is that you do allow us the ability to have our own judgment. And not only that, but that judgment then becomes the contract and the right. interpretation of that. Mm-hmm. But expanding on interpretation, especially in the world of IT, there's so much possibility and so much yeah. learning that we need to do.
It's so, you know, it's such a rapidly changing area, so you have to stay on your toes. Mm-hmm. I think your enthusiasm is so infectious and you're just doing great work. So thanks to Tracy for sharing her success story. Everyone who has an innovative strategy for driving procurement performance is really encouraged to join our podcast series, and I'd love to hear from you about your experiences so we can increase awareness and adoption of proven techniques. So share your experiences with me and learn from your peers by visiting buyersclub.ideascale.com and clicking TechFAR Hub Use Cases. Access curated expertise, prices paid data, and contract vehicles for categorized goods and services by visiting the acquisition gateway at hallways.cap.gsa.gov. As always, thanks to everyone for tuning in, and listen for us next time where we'll continue to take you behind the buy.